Okay, Yashukarach to Saul. Saul, Yashukarach for sponsoring. But really, for also for recommending or suggesting that as part of our preparations for Pesach, we review some of the themes of the Seder and the Haggadah. Many of the topics we're going to talk about tonight, we've tried to address three or four major themes, but they're topics that we've touched upon in the past. But on Wednesday night, we've been trying to explore the thought, after our Gemara Shira and Brachis, explore the thought of Breslov and Rabbi Nachman. We'll see if maybe some of the ideas that he has in the Haggadah can shed even deeper light on some of the themes that we might have been familiar with already. Many have the custom to begin the Seder by reciting the 15 stages or the simonim of the Seder, which are usually listed at the beginning of the Haggadah. And that minhag, or the organization of the simonim in the first place, has a very deep kavana. It's mentioned by a lot of svarim as being something that's critical and important, even before embarking upon the night, to kind of lay out the game plan or the roadmap for what will be throughout the evening. Now, I don't think that that's just because, like, it's a good idea for a speaker to let the audience know how long is this going to go on for. So, you know, these are the things, this is our itinerary, this is what we have to accomplish. Obviously, that's an important pragmatic idea. But the audience at the Seder is kind of a captive audience, and it's a little bit open-ended. So I don't think the point is just to kind of let the audience or the crowd know how long it's going to go on for. It obviously has a deeper significance. And there are 15 steps of the Seder, the 15 simanim. Many mefarshim on the Haggadah note that those 15 simanim correspond to the 15 items that are mentioned in Dayenu, in the Kama Malos Tovos L'Makom Aleinu, the 15 things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us, each one that we emphasize is independently significant. But that also obviously corresponds or is related to the fact that we're celebrating the Seder on the 15th of Nisan. So already, at the outset of the Haggadah, the number 15 seems to be ubiquitous on the night of the Seder. But it's not only the night of the Seder. Throughout Judaism, really, the number 15 is quite underappreciated for the frequency through which it appears. The Mishnah tells himself this Midos that there were 15 steps leading up into the Beis HaMikdash, and it was corresponding to those 15 steps that David HaMelech composed the 15 prakim of Shir HaMalos that were said by the Kohanim, by the Levim, as they stood on those 15 steps. Of Schwab writes in his commentary on the Siddur that reflecting those 15 steps or leading up to the Beis HaMikdash, you know, before entering into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every time we daven, also there are 15 Birchas HaShachar, 15 praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nishtabach, 15 in Emes V'yatziv, and that's because we're entering into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shemona Esrei, and we precede that, again, with kind of that 15 steps before we enter the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, at the night of the Seder in particular, but really throughout Judaism, or certainly as it relates to entering into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, encountering the Ribbono Shel Olam, it seems to always be preceded with the number 15. What is the significance of the number 15? And we're celebrating the Seder, and of course, on the 15th of Nisan, nothing could be coincidental about that. So I believe the answer is, because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Metzia that when you have three generations in a row within the same family, people are committed to learning Torah. You have a father learns Torah, a grandfather learns Torah, the father learns Torah, the son learns Torah, all within the same family. The Gemara guarantees that Ein Torah Pesachetz Mizari. The Torah will never be forgotten from that family. And the Gemara goes on to quote from the Pasuk and say, for Koheles V'achut HaMeshulash, the three-corded string will not be snapped easily. It's obviously more sturdy and can withstand a little bit of pressure and turbulence. So that kind of, obviously, the normal turbulence and bumps in roads of life, the road of life can be weathered if you have this kind of legacy behind you. You have Torah as being something that's entrenched in that family. However, Tosfos writes in Bava Basra that this is only true, you only zayich to this kind of guarantee and assurance if the three generations within the same family overlapped. You didn't have the grandfather, the father, and the son are all learning Torah together. So the Chidon, it's Sefer Midbar Kedemos, calculates how long was it that the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were all learning Torah together. How long did they overlap? So the Chidah, and I won't bore you with the calculations of it, but the Chidah notes that they overlapped for a period of 15 years. And it was those 15 years that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov overlapped. They all learned Torah together. That cemented our connection to Torah, all of the Jewish people. It's the cornerstone of our legacy of the Jewish people, was in those 15 years that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov overlapped. And that's what assures the fact that we will continue to have Torah will not be Paisakas Mizara. What's the language of Hashem Baruch Hu right now? Kilois Yishachem Pizarro will be because of the fact that legacy was cemented in the 15 years that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all overlapped. So as we try...
Told us
the Zara. So that... therefore, it makes perfect sense that that whenever we want to pass on the Masorah to the next generation, which is, of course, our top objective, or one of the objectives of the Leil HaSeder, v'higadat u'bincha b'yom ha'leimor, we attempt to do that through the 15 stages of the Seder, on the 15th of Nisan, kind of passing on the baton to the next generation that we received from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, which was established, solidified during the 15 years that they overlapped. But obviously, this is not only in terms of passing on the Masorah to the next generation. This has to do with how you enter the Beis HaMikdash. How we daven every morning is also through the lens of the number 15, because perhaps we can't approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu independently as individuals. Yes, of course, we need that individual connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we have to do so with the license through the lens of our Masorah, through our parents, through our grandparents. That's the way we should not only pass on, you know, the customs of the Leil HaSeder and Amunah from one generation to the next. That's how we have to encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu on a regular basis. In fact, the Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence that dwelled in our midst was, of course, signified by the Mishkan. Vasuli Mikdash v'Shachanti b'Soichem. And within the Mishkan, Reb Leib Hyman, who Yaakov, I still have a curse of type to Yaakov for introducing me to that Sefer, the Chikrei Leiv, who was the Rav in the Groshul, and very original ideas. So in the Sefer Chikrei Leiv, he notes that within the Mishkan itself, we find a contribution that was made by all of the Avos and by all of the Imohos. How so? Because the wood that was used in the Mishkan was the Atzei Shittim, was the trees that were planted initially by Avram Avinu, as the Pasuk says, by Yita Eshel. The Pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu planted the Eshel tree, which is the same as the Atzei Shittim in Be'er Sheva. Those trees were later transported down to Mitzrayim by Yaakov Avinu. And it was those same trees that we took with us on our way out of Mitzrayim that were later used to build the Mishkan. So we already have a contribution of Avraham Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu also participated in the process of bringing down, harvesting those trees for the Melechus HaMishkan. When was the Mishkan inaugurated? So it was completed in Chodesh Kislev, but it was not inaugurated until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So the Medrash says, why did they wait deliberately until Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Medrash Tanchuma, they waited until Rosh Chodesh Nisan because that was the birthday of Yitzchak. So we find a contribution that was made by Avram, by Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all found in the Mishkan. But it's not only the Avos, the Imahos as well. Three of the miracles that occurred in the Mishkan on a regular basis were the fact that there was an Er Maravi, one of the candles on the menorah was constantly burning. There was a bracha, you know, in the Lechem Apanim, throughout the week remained fresh. Of course, bread naturally becomes stale quite quickly, but in the Mishkan, without the benefit, you know, without the benefit of preservatives or anything like that that we find today in bread, there was a nace. The Lechem Apanim remained fresh and hot throughout the week, and of course, there was a Hashruas Hashchina that was always residing overhead. Those three miracles occurred on a regular basis in the Mishkan. Those are the same three miracles that occurred in the tent of Sarah Imenu. We're told that in the tent of Sarah Imenu, Rashi quotes in the Chumash, there are three miracles that occurred on a regular basis. There was a Ner Dolok, Meir of Shabbos, Ler of Shabbos, a candle burned from one Friday to the next Friday. There was a Bracha Metsuya Be'isa. The bread was, you know, unusually filling and satisfying, and also there was an Anan Kasher Al HaOil. There was always a Hashruas Hashchina, a kind of a calming presence that existed in the oil of Sarah Imenu. So those three miracles that occurred in her tent were echoed in the Mishkan. That's what set the paradigm for those Nisan that occurred in regular base in the Mishkan. And it wasn't only in the tent of Sarah Imenu. That also was recreated in the tent of Rivka after Sarah Imenu dies and those three miracles ceased. So when Yitzchak, though, finds Rivka and he brings her into the tent of Sarah Imenu, as the Pasuk says, V'yeh Yitzchak ha'ogah, Sarah Imoy, brought into the tent of Sarah Imenu. So those three miracles, you know, and he was consoled by doing so. So Rashi says, because all those miracles came back when Rivka entered into the tent. So those three miracles are related to Sarah and related, of course, to Rivka. So we find two of the Imahos certainly present within the Mishkan, but the architect of the Mishkan was Bezalel ben Uri ben Chor Lamata Yehuda. He came from the Shevet of Yehuda, a descendant of Leah, and his partner in that process was Ahaliah ben Achisamach, the Shevet Dan. He came from the Shevet of Dan, who was the son of Bilhah, the maidservant of Rachel. So we have Rachel, we have Leah, Rivka, Sarah, together with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all present within the Mishkan. Why? Why was this the case? So the answer is because the Ramban tells us in his Hakdama to Sefer Shmos that the Mishkan, the purpose of the Mishkan, was to recreate the experience of living in the home of the Avos and the Imahos. That was the whole purpose of the Mishkan, to recreate that experience. What did it feel like to live in the home of the Avos and the Imahos? What kind of energizing experience was that? And to bring that, to not have it limited to one family, to bring it to all of the Jewish people, everyone should be able to experience what that was. And that was what was intended by in the building of the Mishkan, was to serve as a reconstitute the home of the Avos and to bring it to every member of Klal Yisrael. And that's why they were found there. Why? Why? Why do we have to recreate the home of the Avos and the Imahos in order to encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu in Va'asu L'Mikdash V'Shechanti B'Soichem? The answer is because we can't approach Hashem unless it's through the lens of the Avos and the Imahos, through our Mesorah. Yes, of course, a person, again, needs to develop their own individual connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, independent of his parents, but at the same time, you can't untether yourself from that Mesorah. It has to be experienced through that lens. And therefore, it's not surprising how many items were donated to the Mishkan, and all of the items that are listed in Parashat Truma at the Tzava, there were 15. Not surprising. Zav, Tcheles, Zav, Kesef, Nechoshes. If you go through the list, you'll see that there were 15 items that were mentioned, again, because the only way we connect the Avos and the Imahos, the only way we connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu is through the lens of the Avos and the Imahos, which was established, cemented in the 15 years that they overlapped. It seems to me that that's why, as well, every couple that wants to bring the Shekhinah into their home has to do throw in this process as well. The Gemara tells us in Saita, we've mentioned it many times, everyone is familiar with it, that the word Ish and Isha are the same, and they share the letters Aleph and Shin. There's one difference between them. Ish has a Yud, Isha has a Hey. And the Gemara tells us, of course, if they were Zoicha, so then the man contributes the Yud, the woman contributes the Hay, and there's Zoicha to have a Hashras HaShchinah in their home by virtue of the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the Yud and the Hay. I don't think it's coincidental that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, many of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have represented a Hashras HaShchinah, but here, specifically, the name Yud and Hay, again, Gematria 15, because the only way they could bring a Hashras HaShchinah into their home is by going through that lens, going through Elmer Seira, and bringing that, you know, attempting to recreate the Mishkan in their home in that same vein, which is, of course, predicated upon the number 15. So this is the cornerstone of approaching a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the foundation of the Jewish people, and therefore it's not surprising that it also is present at the beginning of the Seder. At the beginning of the Seder, as we attempt to reinforce our Emunah, we do so based on our Minhagim, based on our traditions, based on the Messiah of every family and their unique little shtiklach and whatever they have at their Seder. That's all critical. That's all sacrosanct. The night of the Seder, that's so important because it's through that Messiah that's unique to every family that we can encounter Kadosh Baruch Hu. At the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, so the Pasuk says, everyone pointed and said, Zeh Keli Vanvehu, this is my God and I will exalt him. Zeh Keli Vanvehu. So Rashi quotes, as we all know, in the name of the Medrash, even a Shivcha Layam pointed at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were zeichet revelation. That was greater even than Yechezkel HaNavi, some of the greatest Nevi'im. Even the Shivcha Layam, the maidservant at the sea, saw things Yechezkel HaNavi never dreamt of. How did they know? How did Chazal know it was a Shivcha Layam? You'll say it's a tradition. Is there any indication of the Pasuk like that? So the Goyin says yes. Where? Because it says, Zek Heli Vanveyu. Like someone's discovering God for the first time. Whoa, God! You know, like, I didn't expect that. So who didn't expect God to be present? Who didn't realize what was happening? The Shivcha Layam. She was just schlepping along. And there's, whoa, God is here, you know. So she points and says, Zeh Keli Vanveyu. So says the Goyin, that's why Klal Yisrael chimed in later, Elokei Aviv Arai Mimenu. Oh, we know about this, you know, we know about this God. You know, we're familiar with him already. Klal Yisrael chimed in later, Zeh Keli Vanveyu, Elokei Aviv Arai Mimenu. But it was the Shivcha Layam who said, Zeh Keli Vanveyu. Everyone else knew about God and understood that Kadosh Baruch Hu was present here and what was happening. However, if that's the case, I asked Avelin Meir Bloch, and I say for Panin Eidas and Parsis B'Shalach, he asked, why did Klal Yisrael chime in? What, we needed to make them feel bad? You know, like, wow, yeah, we knew about that already. You just discovered that now? We knew about God already. What are we adding over here? Like, it's not nice to them. Let them discover God. Let them have their moment. Why do we have to kind of steal their thunder? So Avelin Meir Bloch explains, no, it's because a bolt of revelation is not useful. I mean, it's inspiring and it's exciting, but it's not something that's transformative if it's a one-time event that's not tied into any other larger narrative. And in fact, those individuals who had that Giloy Shechina at the time of Kriyas Yamtiv went back to being a Shifcha Layam. She wasn't changed to being a Neviyah. She's not one of the Shiva Neviyos, all the Shifcha Layams. They went back to being a Shifcha, went back to being a maidservant, because it was disjointed from anything else that they experienced. However, Klal Yisrael said, no, Zeh Keli V'Anveyu, we have already a narrative which just fits in to who we are and part of our timeline, and therefore they were able to process it and it became something that was transformative for them. And of course, that's part of the nature of what the Seder is all about. That's why it's surrounded by the number 15. We start out with that we're going to approach now Emunah and reinforcing our Emunah. We don't do so independently. We do it in the framework of Zeh Keli V'Anveyu, and that's the framework that we set out right away at the beginning of the Seder, by mentioning the 15 items in the Simani HaSeder. But it's called the Leil HaSeder. Seder. Seder means order. You would think that's something that defines the night. The Simani HaSeder clearly define the night. Again, this is our roadmap, not just so we know when the night will end. You know, like the guy was counting the pages and things. There's more than that. It's not only, maybe it's a framework of how we approach it, but obviously the word Seder itself, the ordering, seems to define the night. How so? I think there's one Musar idea, and that is that you can't accomplish anything that's holy without some sort of plan. Certainly, you need to prepare. We prepare more for the night of, you know, for Pesach than any other. You know, at least we talk about it more by Pesach than any other Yontif. And also, there has to be an organization. The Torah in Parshas Bamidbar spends a long time before the building of the before Kabbalah Satira, talking about. We read about it before Shavuos and Parshas Bamidbar, but around the Mishkan, the Torah talks about, spends a long time talking about the order of the encampments, with the Degolim and who was on which side of the Mishkan. It's a big deal. The Torah spends a long time talking about it. So Bale Musar asks, why? Why does the Torah spend so much time talking about the ordering of Klal Yisrael around the Mishkan, with the flags and everything? So Rabbi Yerucham writes in the Das Torah, Rav Dessler has in Michtam Elio, it's in the Chassidus Shesvarim too, in the Morva Shemesh, that it's because you cannot approach the Mishkan unless there's order. Everyone has to know where they belong. You have to know what place you are in line. There's got to be some order here. You want to accomplish something holy, it has to come with preparation and with an order. It has to be organized. That was perhaps part of the problem with the Chet Meraglim. What was so bad about the Meraglim? Obviously, they both spoke negatively about Eretz Yisrael, but it sounds like it was doomed from the outset. Why? Why were the Meraglim... What's wrong about sending Meraglim? Everyone asked this. Yeshua sent Meraglim before he attempted to conquer Yericho. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Imtir tzishlach." He wanted to send the Meraglim. Send the Meraglim. It was a normal thing to ask for. What was so bad about the Meraglim? Of course, a million different possibilities have been suggested. However, Meir Tzvi Bergman suggested in the Sefer Shari Yerah that perhaps it's alluded to by the Pasuk in Parashas Devarim. The Torah tells us, at the time of the Chet Meraglim, Vatik Ravune Eli, we all came close to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kulchem Vatayimru, and they said, Nishalcha Anoshim Lefaneinu, let us send people before us. So Rashi says, they came Be'er Buvya, they came in confusion. The young people were pushing the old people out of the way. They were shoving them. So it was Irbuvia, it was confusion, as opposed to the time of Kabbalah Sotei, where the Pasuk says, V'tik revune lai kol roshei shifteichem zikneichem. Everyone came in an order. It was the young people, or the old people, then the little younger, then the little younger. It was an organized procession. Here it was Irbuvia. It was mayhem, it was chaos. And when you have that kind of chaos, so nothing holy can happen. It has to be organized. So we start off, at least at the beginning of the Seder, things are organized. We start off Seder, we're going to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and approach reinforcing our Amunah with a Seder. There's an order here. And we find this all the time. We daven from a Siddur. Our davening has to be organized. Before a person learns Torah, he has a Seder to organize the thoughts in his mind. The Avodah Yom Kippurim was with a Seder. Everything has to have a Seder about it in order to be organized. In fact, the Gemara says in Masechtas Megillah that Kol Ha'Omer Davar B'Shem Omro, whoever says something over in the name of the person who said it, maybe Gula Lo'olam. He brings redemption to the world. Why? Because the Pasuk says in Megillah, right, that Esther told the time of Esther Lamelch B'Shem Mordechai, she told the name of Mordechai because she told Achashverosh the name of Mordechai. He's the one who saved them from Bigson and Zeresh. She wrote it in his Sefer Zechronos. Because of that, when he woke up in the middle of the night, so he remembered the fact that it was Mordechai who saved him, and that's the whole story of the Gula from Purim. So whoever says something over in the name of the person who said it may be Gula Leilam. However, the Maral writes, his commentary on Ovis, that no, it's more than that. It's not just because that's what happened to happen in the story of Purim. It's because before the world was created, there was Tohu Vavohu. There was confusion. It was chaos. It was mayhem. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, So it brought order to that chaos. Brought order to the chaos. So if a person, people are saying things without attributing credit to them, to the person who says it. So it's like we have online now. Everybody says whatever they want behind the pseudonym. So first of all, people say things they would never say in person, but also half of it is, half of it is even people. Half of it is bots. Half of it is nobody who's saying it. The whole thing is mayhem and it's chaos. So that's a toihu vavayu. You have to, in order to have order, you have to attribute things to the people who say them. People have to stand behind their statements. So when you say something over in the name of the person who said it, you may be gulul olam. That brings a seder to the world. Which is the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in the first place, was bringing a seder to that chaos. However, so maybe that's because whenever we approach Hashem, it has to be through with a seder, a seder of learning before the shir, maybe. A seder of this Yom HaKippur. Rabbi Nachman, though, is quoting Likutei Halachos, that's from Rabbi Nosson. So he quotes the name of Rabbi Nachman, that perhaps is an even deeper. It's not just a pragmatic. You have to approach a Kaddish Baruch Hu through organization. It's because the whole night of the Seder, we're emphasizing, reinforcing the fact that there's a Seder to the world. So many things to us seem like there's no Seder, like it's haphazard. How could it be a Kaddish Baruch Hu is running the world and this is happening and that is happening? It doesn't fit in with the plan that we thought a Kaddish Baruch Hu has for the world. It seems chaotic. Some people, with the earthquake, wow. Some people thought the eclipse was like a reaction to something that's happening without realizing that it's like, it's a phenomenon. No, it's not. That was a phenomenon, but the earthquake seems chaotic. It wasn't predicted, for 1,000 years. So it seems sometimes like the whole world is chaotic, like the whole world is tohu vavohu. So no, comes the Seder, and what's the message at the very beginning? There's a Seder here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's watching over it. There's a custodian. There's a plan. To us, it might not seem like a Seder, but the whole night is called Seder because the whole night is reinforcing the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the events. That's the message of the Karban Pesach. The Mishnah tells at the beginning of the sixth parak of Pesachim in Tamid Nishchat that all the karbanos of the day were brought in between the Tamid Shel Shach and the Tamid Shel Beinu Arbaim. The pasuk says, "Va'arach aleha oila aleha krev kol karbanos kulam." All the karbanos had to be brought between the Tamid Shel Shachar and the Tamid Shel Beinu Arbaim. That was the first carbon of the day, the Tamid Shel Shach. The last carbon of the day was Tamid Shel Beinu Arbaim. There is one exception. There's one carbon that is brought outside of that framework, outside of those two brackets, of those two carbonists. Carbon Pesach. Carbon Pesach is brought after the Tamid Shel Beinu Arbaim. That's why on Erev Pesach, the Tamid Shel Beinu Arbaim is brought earlier in order to give time to bring the carbon Pesach after the Tamid Shel Shachar. Why? Why is the carbon Pesach brought outside of that framework? It seems to be unique. Perhaps the message is because the Karban Pesach comes to teach us even those things that seem like they don't fit into the normal plan, they don't fit into the normal mizgeret that we would have expected, and it seems like it's haphazard, like it's random. No. The Karban Pesach comes to teach us that's also the Ribbono Shel Olam. Even the stuff that's outside of the framework, that's also part of the Seder. That's also part of the ordering of a Kaddish Baruch Hu and his running of the world. And that's a critical message that we have to have at the beginning of the Seder that we're looking to have, reinforce our Emunah. Is predicated upon not only our connection to the Messiah, but also to understand that everything that we see is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ordering of the world, whether we understand it or not. We do many things at the night of the Seder to engage the children. Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikas. The first one comes with karpas, right at the beginning. The Gemara tells them, Masechtas Pesachim, why do we have karpas? Why do we have the vegetable at the beginning of the Seder? Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikas. Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikas. With Atinoikas. We also move the tables in and out. Today, that custom we don't have anymore, but we used to move the tables in and out. Or Kadesh Yishalu Hatinoikas. So therefore, Rav Rishayim are of the opinion you don't have to have a kezayis of karpas. It's not a mitzvah achilo, like the matzah, the morar. It's just to arouse the curiosity of the children. So it's enough if you have a token, a little bit. In fact, the Rishayim say you should not have a kezayis. Dafka not have a kezayis. Why should you not have a kezayis? Because it creates a conundrum with regards to bracha achreina. According to some Rishayim, you should have in mind the morar when you make the hadam on the kezayis, on the karpas, as we all know. Because the Haggadah is not, they don't consider the Haggadah to be a hefsik between the Bari Pri Adam and the karpas and the morar. Other Rishayim think that it is a hefsik. It is a hefsik. Why don't we make a Bar Pri Adam in the Morah? Because it comes in the middle of a meal. It's covered by the Hamoitzi that comes before it. But then, if they consider it to be a Hefsik, if you're going to have a Kezayis of Karpas, you're going to have to make a Bracha Achreina. It's not going to be covered by benching. So that's why they recommend not to have a Kezayis of Karpas. The Rambam's view is you should have a Kezayis of Karpas. Dafka should have a Kezayis of Karpas. So Goyz Maimonios asks on the Rambam, on the bottom of the Rambam, why do you have to have a Kezayis? The whole thing is a token. Is just Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikas, because you want to inspire them to ask. Why do you have a kezayis? So Soloveitchik explains in his Haggadah, he's just reading the Rambam, connecting the dots. For the Rambam, it's a mitzvah sechil of the night to have karpas. It has the same shear as matzah, the same shear as maror. So karpas is also a mitzvah sechil. And that's supported by other indications of the Rambam, because Rambam holds karpas has to be dipped in charoises. Of course, we know the maror has to be dipped in charoises. There's a machlekes in the Mishnah as to why. Is it because it killed the bugs that were in the lettuce with the chasa, or some poison that was in the lettuce, whatever it is, or zechel etit, to the mortar that we use, zechel etapuach, whatever it is, it's somehow connected to the bitterness of the avdus of Mitzrayim. So we dip the maror in the charoises, but the Rambam's view is you dip the karpas in charoises too. Not in salt water. Rav and Rishonim disagree. They say, no, well, we dip the karpas in charoises. The themes have nothing to do with each other. Maror should be dipped in charoises. Because of the poison that was in the maror. Why you dip the karpas in charoises? You dip the karpas in salt water, vinegar, or something else. The Rambam's view was you dip it in charoises. Not only does the Rambam hold you dip karpas in charoises, the Rambam holds you dip matzah in charoises too. That's different. The Rambam, karpas in charoises, matzah in charoises. Every mitzvah sechil on the night of the Seder, according to the Rambam, you dip in charoises. So karpas, the fact that Rambam feels you dip karpas and charoises shows that it's a mitzvah sechil of the night. Karpas is one of the mitzvah sechil of the night. Other Rishonim disagree with everything over here in the Rambam. That's the sheet of the Rambam. How could this be one of the mitzvah sechil of the night? The karpas is one of the Gemara says the reason we do karpas, k'dei sheyishalu atinoikas, how did the Rambam make that into a mitzvah sechil? So it seems to me, this part the Rav doesn't say, but it seems to me that perhaps what the Rambam here is teaching us is K'dei Sheyishalu HaTinoikos is one of the mitzvahs halayla. It's not just a regular mitzvah of chinuch we have all year long. Tonight, one of the mitzvahs halayla, which is formalized, which, with the karpas, has a mitzvah achila to remind, there's matzah tonight, there's mara tonight. K'dei Sheyishalu HaTinoikos, engaging the children, arousing their curiosity, bringing them into the story in the process. That's one of the mitzvahs of the night, like matzah and mara. The Torah already tells us that. The whole mitzvah, CPSI is communicated to us through the lens of the child. Perhaps because the children were targeted by Paro. So the children were critical to the story of CPSI Mitzrayim. They're the object to which we're supposed to focus on. The Torah directs us to the children. And therefore, it's not surprising the Rambam brought them into center stage, that one of the mitzvahs achila of the night, in a litvish way, is to engage the children. Now, of course, all year long, we have to worry about our children, right? That's a person who only focuses on his own davening and, lets his child run wild is shirking his responsibility of chinuch. We have to make sure our children are engaged in shul, our children are engaged in davening in the right format. The heavy hand doesn't work today, as we all know, but whatever it is, the more carrot than the stick is always better today. But we have to make sure to do the best that we can, whatever strategies work today, to make sure that the children are engaged. A person can't focus only on himself and worry about his children second. He can't have a Seder and forget about the fact that his children aren't learning. That's not proper chinuch. I think the same is true in the other direction, too. Unfortunately, I see sometimes people only focus on the children. I don't know, it's not a very frum saying, but it's all about the children. Yes, it's true. Those are all, our continuity, Jewish continuity, is about the children, for sure. But it's also about us. I wouldn't pass everything off to the children. If my child is learning, but I'm not, that's also not good. It's not only about the children. It's also, right, it's critical, the children. Jewish continuity hinges on the children, the Jewish future, but it's not only about the Jewish future, it's also about the Jewish present. We also have to make sure that we're learning at the same time. But those are adjacent obligations. They're not the same, right? My obligations to myself, my own avodas Hashem, it's about me, still also. Zed dor dor shav, not only the next generation, but zed dor dor shav, mevach shei fanecha, Yaakov Sarah, we also have to search for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Build our own nation, but at the same time, we can't shirk our responsibility as chinuch. Those are not the same, they're related, but different. The night of the Seder becomes one and the same. Engaging the children is not just about chinuch, that I have to make sure my children are not alienated at my Shabbos table. That's also true. But the night of the Seder, they're one and the same. My obligation, my child's obligation, are united. And that's what's represented by the karpas. Why? Why? Why at the night of the Seder are the children so important? So obviously, it's because we want to pass on the Messiah to them. Part of passing on the baton, as we already talked about. And the Torah phrases it in this fashion. But perhaps again, there's multiple messages here. Karpas is dipped, as we mentioned, in salt water, according to some, according to the Rambam and Chavrusas. So Rabbeinu Manoach, in the commentary in the Rambam already, writes, where's the first time we find a dipping in the Torah? The Pasuk says, in connection with Bechiras Yosef, Vayitbalu asakutainas badam. They dipped the Ksainas Pasim in blood in order to convince Yaakov Avinu that Yosef had died. So Karpas is somehow linked to the Rabbeinu Manoach already. In the commentary in the Rambam, right? The Karpas is somehow linked, an allusion to Mechiras Yosef. The word Karpas itself is a mystery a little bit. The Chassam Sofer in his Tshuva is close to the name of his Rebbe of Nosson Adler. He wondered what does the word Karpas mean. He claims the word Karpas means a vegetable, specifically a celery. Okay? Many Rishonim say Karpas is Yerukis. Yerukis is vegetables, probably not a potato, probably like a green vegetable. Parsley is a garnish, a spice. So some focus on the celery. I don't know. I don't know if you have to religiously have celery. If you have your tradition is potatoes, kol hakavod, have potatoes. Some Rebbe Teitz has bananas. Okay, that's your tradition. Rebbe Teitz used it as a teachable moment to teach his children. We're learning Ketz Mavarchin. He used it as a teachable moment to in salt water to teach them that the bracha on bananas is hadoma. That's Minig Teitz. Yeah, but they taught all of Klal Yisrael that the bracha on bananas is hadam. Everybody knows it because of Rabbi Teitz. Huh? Potatoes is a European thing. They didn't have green vegetables. They didn't have it. Who had celery Yeah, they didn't have it. So they used potatoes. They used whatever they had, whatever is a bari pri adama. Anyway, that's what Nosson Adler claims. Nosson Adler claims that it's karpas is celery. However, others already point to the fact, where's the first time we find karpas? The only time we find karpas in Tanakh is in Megillas Esther, where the pasuk says, "Chur karpas uschelas," describing the wool, the garments that were the big day malchus. Chur karpas uschelas, and in fact, on the pasuk of Ksenas Pasim, Rashi defines what is Ksenas Pasim is kemoi karpas uschelas. Rashi says like karpas uschelas, so it's a kind of wool, but it was also used. Rashi says karpas, that kind of wool, was used in the Ksenas Pasim. So again, the karpas itself is an allusion to Mechiras Yosef. There's other allusions to Mechiras Yosef in the Seder. In fact, it's full of them. The Dal Kaisis we have at the Leil Seder, as we all know, the famous answer of the Yishalmi is, why do we have four cups at the night of the Seder? Kenegah the Arba L'shonis of Geulah, V'itzeis V'itzalti V'goalti V'lokachti. But there's another opinion in the Yishalmi that the four Kaisis correspond to the four times that the word, it's really three, but the three times the word Kais is mentioned in the dream of the Sarah Mashkim that was interpreted by Yosef. The Pasuk says, three times the word Kais appears in that Pasuk. The Yerushalmi says the fourth time is the Kais of Birchas Hamazon. But either way, the four Kaises are patterned loosely after the dream of the Sarah Mashkim that was interpreted by Yosef. Why? Why are there all these allusions to Mechiras Yosef in the Seder? So the answer is obvious, because the Gemara says in Shabbos, a person should never, warns us, never show favoritism to one child over the others, because, it was only because Yosef, Yaakov Avinu showed favoritism to Yosef by giving him a Ksenas Pasim, which cost two Siloim, for two Siloim, Yaakov Aseinu Mitzrayim. Because of that, we ended up being in Mitzrayim, because Yosef was sold to Mitzrayim, Yaakov Avinu came after him, and ultimately the Jewish people ended up in Golos because of the Ksenas Pasim. That's what triggered this whole arousal, jealousy of the brothers. They sold him to Mitzrayim. The whole thing happened because of a jacket that cost two sloim. Some say, Rav Asher Weiss has this in his Haggadah and Minchas Asher, some say that the Chad Gadya is an allusion to Mechiras Yosef, that they dipped the Ksenas Pasim in blood of a goat. That's why Yosef is considered to be a goat, Chad Gadya, which was sold for two sloim by the father. How so? Because because Yosef was really sold to Mitzrayim by virtue of the coat that his father gave him, which was worth not two zuzim, but two sloim. His father, you know, obviously didn't intend for that to happen, but inadvertently his father ended up selling him to Mitzrayim for coats that cost two zuzim. So the Leil HaSeder also commemorates the fact that how we ended up, or recalls how we ended up in Mitzrayim in the first place, which was through Mechiras Yosef. Mechiras Yosef. What happened, though? What brought about? What precipitated Mechiras Yosef? The fact that Yosef was bullied by his brothers. I mean, just to put it in modern terms, he was bullied by his brothers. Yeah, maybe he started it. Whatever you want to say, but at the end of the day, he was isolated, marginalized by his brothers. So much so that when Yaakov Avinu refused to be consoled later on, because he believes Yosef to be dead, so the brothers all come to console Yaakov Avinu, Vayakumu kol bonav v'chol benoitzav l'nachamoy, Vayimoy l'isnachem. He refuses to be consoled. How do they try and console him? How do you try and console someone? Nebuch le'aleinu loses a child. How do you do that? The Rechaim HaKadosh says they presented a wall of solidarity. Vayakumu kol bonav v'chol benoitzav l'nachamoy. They said to Yaakov Avinu, look at this beautiful family that you have. Look at this. The daughters-in-law were there too, says the Rechaim HaKadosh. The sons, the daughter-in-laws, the family, everyone was there. Everyone was there. They said, look at this beautiful family. Yaakov Avinu refused to be consoled because of that one child who wasn't there. The one child who wasn't there, that child who was marginalized, who was isolated, who was on the fringe, we can't. Yaakov Avinu couldn't come to himself because of it. And it's because that child was isolated, was marginalized, was kicked out. So because of that, we ended up in Mitzrayim. So therefore, I think it's very apropos, the night of the Seder, we put the children in the center. Even the children who are otherwise the Rasha, the Tam, the She'eni Yadei Elisha, who otherwise are excluded, the night of the Seder, they're celebrated, we put them on a pedestal, front and center. It's all about you to show them that they are included. No one should feel marginalized, no one should feel isolated on the night of the Seder. But again, perhaps there's a deeper, I think that's one theme. Perhaps there's a deeper message too. The Ari HaKadosh writes, this is a theme throughout the Shara Kavanah to the Ari HaKadosh. I think we talked about it one year. That we got out of Mitzrayim, we were on Memtesh Shari Tuma. Usually, Ruchnius, a person builds step after step after step. One Madrega to the next Madrega, next Madrega. The night of the Seder, though, or when we came out of Mitzrayim, we're in the Memtesh Shari Tuma, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu awarded us with Madregas we were not Zeichet to. Well, we weren't really worthy of them. So we had like an explosion of Kedusha. That's why the height of the night of the Seder in the Shara Kavonis, in the Kavonis, is Hallel and Shul. So in Nusach Sfarad, it's a big deal. Hallel and Shul, because we got out. We like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu catapulted us. You know, I can shoot the ladder. We climbed the ladder to the top right away. Right away. And then we kind of trickle down. Trickle down because we have to bring those higher iris down with us into the real life that we have. And that's why we end off the Seder. We talked about this one year. We end off the Seder with Sfiras HaOmer, which is going to bring us into the process of actually being worthy of those Madregas that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us artificially. So as we go through the Seder, we actually go down. It's counterintuitive. So writes the Ari HaKadosh Shara Kavanis, Karpas is from the Meichen de Katnus. We started off with the highest level of Meichen de Gadlus. There's actually three Madregas. Gadlus, Katnus, Gadlus, Katnus, Gadlus, Katnus. He reads this whole thing into the Seder. Karpas is Katnus. Kadesh is Gadlus, Meichen de Gadlus. That, you know, revelation that we had. Kriya Samsov, we weren't Zeichetu. We weren't worthy. Kadosh Baruch Hu gifted it to us. We have Meichen de Katnus, you know, like a smaller mindset. And we get to Karpas. So in a certain sense, perhaps Karpas is not just Kadesh Yishalu Hatinoikos. The kid who's opposite me should ask a question. It means the katan who's in me, who also has questions. We also have to elicit those questions too. Let's elicit those questions too. The meichin de katanus of myself. The Mishnah says in Masechtas Avos, da mashatosh of apikiris. A person has to know what to answer the apikiris. You have to know answers to basic questions in hashkafa and emuna. It's a good thing. Age of the world, dinosaurs. You should have an answer to these things. Yeah, have an answer to these things. Dama Shatosh of Lapi Kirst is the one who will say, God, there's no God who created the world. Why? Does everybody need to know these issues? This was a big debate a few years ago. Does everybody have to be well acquainted with these issues and research these issues? Why? Is everyone going to encounter the Apikiris? Are we all engaged in theological, philosophical, religious debates like the Ramban, you know, in Barcelona? Are we doing this at work? We're engaging in these kinds of back and forths. Maybe some people are. And if you encounter the outside world at some point, you're going to have to, you know, maybe it means if you're going to be exposed to this, have answers for yourself. If you're not going to be exposed to it, you're going to be, be sheltered. So then you don't need it. Maybe. Or perhaps what the Mishnah is really saying is not so much that we have to debate other people. What it means is within ourselves, Dama Shatosh of Apikiris, not that we ourselves are not Apikiris, but those questions of Apikorsis which could arouse within ourselves, a person is exposed to these things, you have to have an answer to that. So even if I won't be challenged by somebody at work, it'd be unethical, you know, it would be improper for them to approach me about those things or to challenge me in that way. If I myself might have those questions, you have to know what to answer to the Apikiris who's within you or the potential Apikiris. The questions of Apikorsis could arise in our own lives. And so too, the night of the Seder, yes, it's Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikos, but not only the children, yes, it's true in a literal sense also, but also the child is in us. The one who has questions in Emunah also. We have to be honest with ourselves also. We can't put on this, you know, this mask of bravado. Oh, we have all the answers. Come to Tata, who's sitting at the head of the Seder with his kittel and the big thing. I have all the answers for you. No, no, no. Even the Tata can also have questions. Rashi says often, oh, a few times, Eini Yodea. A person should always accustom himself to saying, Eini Yodea. It's okay if also the father, the Rebbe, says, I don't know. When my kids ask me sometimes questions, I say, I honestly don't know. So they say, you're the Rabbi, you have to know. I don't know. So they think I'm playing games with them or something. I'm not playing a game. I don't know. I have no idea. I have to research that. I don't know. So there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with the father also saying, the child who's inside of us, the Merkin the Katniss, of asking questions. We have to be brave enough, courageous enough, vulnerable enough to admit at the beginning of the Seder to our children, we also have questions also. We also have questions. We're also engaged in this process with you of re-strengthening our Amunah. And even if we don't have the answers, it's okay. Everyone asks, Karpas is Kadesh Yishalu Atinoikos. What's the answer? We don't give the child the answer. We start off piquing their curiosity. And what's the answer? No answer. The Manishtana also. We ask four questions. Everyone stands on the table and says it in all whatever languages they want. What's the answer to Manishtana? We don't care. Avadim Ayinu, the father of the time. Let's start with the story. What kind of message is that? So the Nesivus already writes. Not a modern commentary. The Nesivus has a Haggadah called the Mais HaNisim. Moshe Wolfson has this in his Haggadah also, the Munas Itecha. The answer is to the child, we don't have all the answers. We don't know, but we're going to continue weiter anyway. It's okay. It's okay. We're going to engage in this process. We're going to struggle with that, but it's okay. We don't have the answer, but that's still all right. We can still go on. Many say that's the difference, of course, between the question of the Chacham and the question of the Rosh. As we all know, we pounce on the Rosh. Ma avoida zois lachem. Ah, lachem, v'loi loi. You know, for them, not for you. You would have been excluded had you been there. The Chacham says the same thing. Why don't we pounce on him? What are these laws and statutes that Shemalah God has commanded? You, not him. Says the Vudraham already, commentaries, and the Rishonim and others continue in that path. Explain, it's because the Chacham mentioned God. Okay, so he evoked the word of God, you know, God's name, so we get he gets credit, you know, like the Talmud Chacham who always says Baruch Hashem. So in his questioning God, he mentions God. How's that okay? The answer is no. He's saying I believe in God anyway. I want answers. I have questions, but I believe. If you believe and that's your premise, that's fine. We can talk to you. The Rosh comes and says, "Give me an answer, and then I'll believe. Give me an answer." And then we can't debate with you. We can't engage in that context. It has to be first that Muna is a given. You have to make that leap of faith. And we begin the Seder with questions that we have no answers. We begin the Seder with a leap of faith. Only once we have taken that leap of faith and we ourselves, the child within us, is willing to take that leap of faith, can we engage in this discussion. But it's based on that premise that we have questions, and even if they're not going to be answered, we believe anyway, then we can have this discussion. The Kotzka says, that's the pshat we say by Yanki Lokenu. Ein kalekenu, ein kadunenu. There is no one like our God. There's no one like our King. Then we say, mi kalekenu, mi kadunenu. Who is like our God? Who is like our King? So you ask a question. We start off with a statement. We start off with an answer. Ein kalekenu, ein kadunenu. Then we ask a question. Mi kalekenu, mi kadunenu. First, the question should be, mi kalekenu, mi kadunenu. Then we say, no, ein kalekenu, ein kadunenu. There's no one like God. Why do we start off, there's no one like God, and then ask the question? So says the Kotzker, because if you believe Ein Kelekenu, Ein Kadunenu, there's no one like God, and you accept, you know, you are Muna, then you can begin to ask questions. We can ask questions within that framework, but you can't do it unless that's the premise of the discussion. And perhaps, this Rabbi Nachman has in Kutei Halachos also, he says, that's why perhaps the Karpas, we eat Dafka less than a Kazayas. We're starving. You haven't eaten anything the whole day. People are plotzing. They were dying to take an extra potato. If you have potatoes, it works much better. Potatoes are good. The cooked potatoes are fine. They're very nice. Be nice to have a 3 or 4 more potatoes. Have a kezias. No. The answer is we come in starving. We have Karpas gives us a little thing, a little appetizer, whet our appetite, and that's all we have, and we continue on hungry throughout the Seder. That's because we can continue on with questions. Even if all we get is a little morsel of an answer, we're okay. We're okay. Even if we come out and improved a little bit, that's all right. Even if we continue on with questions, we continue on hungry. That's all right. One final idea. The Gemara talks about the matzah, based on the pasuk. This describes it as lechem oini. Lechem oini means the bread of affliction. The Gemara has two drushes. One is lechem oni, Ma ani berpusav kam berpusa. The ani eats a half a loaf, not a whole loaf. So too, the matzah that we eat for the mitzvah matzah has to be a broken matzah. Yeah, it has to be a half a matzah. The Gemara also darshins lechem sha'ayinu malav dvarim harbe. Could be lechem ayni. The bread of answers. The bread that we have a conversation. The maggid is set over the matzah. That's why we have the matzah uncovered throughout maggid. Most of the Rishayim are of the opinion that these two drushes are not mutually exclusive, they're complementary. Meaning, the broken matzah should be open throughout maggid. It should be an ani berpusav kam berpusav. The Rambam's view is you break it right before the mitzvah of matzah. It's whole throughout maggid. However, that's not our view. That's the common custom. The common custom is to break the matzah, yachatz, before we begin maggid, so that the matzah is broken throughout maggid, and we leave it open. It should be the bread of conversation, but also a broken matzah. Which matzah do we break? As we know, the custom is to break the middle matzah. The middle matzah. So Rishayim, the Achrayim, ask a few questions on that custom. Hey, in Mavir Lal Mitzvahs, you want to use a matzah for the mitzvah matzah. Why do we use the second matzah? Why do we use the second matzah for the mitzvah matzah? Use the top matzah. Ein mavir on al mitzvahs. You know, by your tefillin also. You have to put your tefillin in the bag such that you don't pass over one of the tefillin before you get to the other one. So you put on the shalyad first. The shalyad has to be closer. So you put it on the right side for a righty. You put the shalyad on the right side. And the towel should be sticking out a little bit further than the tefillin. Ein mavir on al mitzvahs. You shouldn't pass over the tefillin to get to the towel. You shouldn't pass over the shalyad. You should get to the shalyad. So why do we pass over the top matzah to get, and when you do the lechem mishnah also Friday night, the bottom matzah should be close. The bottom challah should be closer to you on Friday night than the top challah. Because ain't mavir on all mitzvahs. So why do we pass over the top matzah for the second matzah? Why? And why, if you're going to break the matzah anyway, start with shvuris. Shvuris are much cheaper than shlemus. Matzah is expensive today. Start off with a broken matzah. I have to have a whole matzah. We check it to make it sure it's shalem. 10 seconds later, we're breaking the thing. Why? Why do we start off with a whole matzah and then dafka we break it? And then we steal it back and forth. Of course, the bigger part, you break the matzah. The bigger part, as we all know, you put it aside. You set it aside. It's called the Mishabura quotes from the Ariya Kaddish, the Magen Avraham. That's called the Afikayman. We set it aside. And the children steal it back and forth. The Gemara says, Imsachim, Chayt v'matzah zum yizu. Throughout the night, we're stealing matzahs back and forth. Kadesh, Shishalot, Tinoi. Because again, to keep the children engaged throughout the night. What do? We steal the matzah back and forth. And of course, this keeps the kids interested, but it ingrains them with a horrible midas of stealing back and forth. So all the Paiskim are bothered with this. Why are we ingraining these bad midas in the children of stealing things back and forth? We shouldn't do it. They should be giving it to their friends, sharing. I said they teach in all the preschools. You share. So share. Why are we stealing? I'm hopping around from you. You're stealing from me. We should be sharing the thing. What's going on over here? So many explain along these lines that it's because the middle matzah corresponds to Yitzhak. Many misfarim you have. The three matzahs correspond to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The top matzah is Avram, the second matzah is Yitzchak, the third matzah is Yaakov. The middle matzah is Yitzchak. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram Avinu at the time of the Bris Ben Absarim, Kigeri Yazarech, Beres Olahem, Vabodim, Ve'inu, Oysam, Arboa Me'oshana, your children are going to be strangers in a foreign land. They'll be persecuted for 400 years. So one version of the Medrash is those 400 years began with the birth of Yitzchak. One version of the Medrash is that it was condensed to 210 because of the difficulty and the intensity of the labor. The other version of the Medrash is the 400 years began with the birth of Yitzchak. In fact, when was the enslavement? When did the enslavement begin? In Parshas Va'era, the Baal Turim writes, Va'era Gematria 208, Gematria Yitzchak. That's when the Shibud began in force. It's in Parshas Va'era, which is Gematria Yitzchak, because the whole Bris Ben Absarim was focused on Yitzchak. So too, the promise of Bris Ben Absarim. Va'arboa be'azarachem. Va'arbeh, which means I will increase. Again, the Mefarshim write, Gematria Yitzchak, 208, because the bracha was also given to Yitzchak. So the bracha Bris Ben Absarim, the curse, or the difficulty, the punishment of the Bris Ben Absarim, the two sides of the Bris, were all manifest with regards to Yitzchak. The Gra, in his commentary on the Haggadah, also notes that we have four children that are mentioned throughout the Haggadah because of the four children that are mentioned in the Torah, in the Mitzvah, Sipri, Yetzias, Mitzrayim. Ben is Gematria 52. Four children together, 52, four times. Gematria 208, Gematria Yitzchak. Why? Because the four children, which is the continuity of the Jewish people, Barboa Zarachem, but at the same time, the four children who experienced Yetzias, the Shibud of Mitzrayim, all Yitzchak 208. Hagar is also 208. So says the Goyen, because Hagar wanted her child, Yishmael, to be the spiritual heir of Avram Avinu. However, Kadosh Baruch Hu says it's not going to be the case. Ki be Yitzchak, Yikar v'chazara. Even though they're both 208. Hagar 208, Yitzchak 208, Varboaz Arachem, Varboaz Chabim Moid Moid. The Kadosh Baruch Hu promised someone's going to be whose gematria is 208 is going to receive these brachas. Could have been Yitzchak, could have been Yishmael, the son of Hagar. In the end of the day, of course, it was Yitzchak. It was Yitzchak. But it's ki be Yitzchak yikar chazar v'lo kol Yitzchak. It's part of Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak. It was, of course, Yaakov Avinu, but not Esav. And therefore, many Sfarim say we split the matzah, the middle matzah, that's Yitzchak. The smaller part was the part that was always going to Yaakov Avinu. That was the brachas that Yitzchak was always supposed to give to Yaakov. The bigger part was the chelek habechira that was meant for Esav. That's the bigger part of the middle matzah. That's the bigger part. But one night, but Yaakov, of course, stole that. He stole the brachas from Esav, and therefore we steal the bigger part. We steal the bigger part throughout the night. We steal to remind ourselves of the fact that Yaakov Avinu was zeichet to the brachas, all of the brachas, even the brachas that were intended for Esav. What night was it that he stole the brachas from Esav? They went to Yitzchak to receive the brachas. Rashi tells us on Chumash, it was the night of the Seder. That's why he tells them to bring two gedoy izim. Rashi says, echad lepesach ve'echad lechagiga. The Gra says, that's what the cryptic, mysterious pizman, the song of Chad Gadya is about, is the two gedoy izim that Yaakov Avinu gave to Yitzchak in order to receive the brachas. In fact, at the time that he gave him the gedei izim, the pasuk says he also gave him bread and wine. Vatitein es halechem vayovi lo es hayayin, which Rav Chaim Kanievsky writes in the time of the cross, the reason we have matzah and the Dawud Kaisis at the Leil HaSeder, to recreate what happened at the time the Yaakov Avinu stole the brachas. That's why we daven, one of the Sfarim writes, that's why we daven for tau on Pesach, because what was the bracha Yaakov Avinu received from Yitzchak, in lieu of, it was supposed to go to Esav, was v'yitim l'chom yitau ha-shamayim, yishmanei ha-aretz. He received the bracha of Tau. So therefore on Pesach, we daven specifically for Tau. One of the other Sfarim writes, I think this is Menachem Mendel of Riminov, that's why also we do open the door of Shvei Chamoscha. Why? Because Esav came in right as Yaakov Avinu was leaving. The Pasuk says, he ach yotza yotza Yaakov me'ez p'nei Yitzchak, v'esav achiv b'mi tzedoy. So Yaakov Avinu heard Esav coming, says the Medrash, he hid behind the door as Esav walked through. So we open the door at the night of the Seder because we know Esav is there, and we say, Shvei Chamoscha L'Goyim Asher Lo'iduucha, because Esav was coming in the door as we were leaving. Very nice. So that's why on the night of the Seder also, we're visited by Eliyahu HaNavi. Yitzchak is Gematria 208, Gematria Pinchas, Pinchazu Eliyahu. The whole thing is around the stealing of the brachis from Esav at the night of the Seder. That's what's represented by the bigger half of the matzah. Why do we call it the Afikomen? So the Medrash says that it's because Yaakov Avinu stole the brachis b'mirma. How did he steal? The pasuk says he stole it b'mirma ba'achicha v'kachas b'irchasecha. He stole it with cunning. What did he do cunningly? He fed Yitzchak the Afikomen b'mirma gematria 278 gematria Afikomen. He fed Yitzchak the Afikomen. What did he accomplish by feeding him the Afikomen? Because the Ramban on Chumash already writes, Yaakov had to give Yitzchak food to arouse within him the brachas. That's where the custom comes. When you go to a Rebbe for a bracha, you give him a pidyon. You give him a nedava. Why do you give him a nedava? Because to enable the tzaddik to bless you, you have to give him something. That builds a connection between the two of us. So where do you find the paradigm for that? Yaakov made Yitzchak food. So in order to arouse the bracha, you have to be able to give him something. You have to give him something to eat. So that's why Yitzchak said to Yaakov, or Esav, go make me food. So Yaakov Avinu brings me the food, then they can have a connection and build a bracha. But he fed him the afikomen. And he can't eat anything after the afikomen. So when Esav comes to receive the brachas, he says, I can't give you any brachas. I can't eat anything anymore because I already ate the afikomen. And you and I can't build a connection unless you can give me something to eat. So he wasn't able to give Esav any brachas. That's the one thing we tell the Chacham. We tell the Chacham represents Yaakov Avinu. Ein maftir nachar Pesach afikomen. Don't worry, the Bechira is ours. It's sealed with us. Am Segula is also Gematria 208, Gematria Yitzchak. We are the Am Segula. We are the Am HaNifchar. So perhaps we begin the Seder also with Yachatz, reminding ourselves, yes, it's true, part of the brachas were intended for Esav, but we stole those away. We got them. We are the Am HaNifchar. Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching over us. Even though sometimes we don't understand the mice of the plan of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we believe ultimately that we are the Am HaNifchar. However, in Likutei Halachos, here he quotes something from Rabbi Nachman, amazing, tremendous. He says, no, it helps us understand that even though, again, part of the piece, part of the puzzle we can understand. A little bit of the puzzle, like the carapace, it whets the appetite. We understand the smaller part of the puzzle. There's a whole missing piece of the puzzle, which is hidden away, that we don't see. We have also so much potential. Each one of us is icebergs. There's a little bit that sticks above the surface, but there's so much more there. There's so much more there. And we're reminded of that of Yachatz. We see a little bit of the puzzle. There's a whole big puzzle here. The matzah is complete. We know it's complete. We start off as incomplete. We only see one puzzle, one piece of the puzzle. There's a bigger piece that's missing, and we recognize we are the Am Segula. We understand, even though we don't see that other piece of the puzzle, it's there. And even though we have so much more potential, you know, we understand that we've only scratched the surface. Our Amuna can get so much deeper, can get so much more profound. But what do we have to do in order to scratch beneath the surface, to get to that deeper Amuna, to the part of the iceberg that's beneath the surface? We have to break it. We have to be willing to break our complacency and to shed a little bit our armor of the fact that we know everything, and be willing to break ourselves and ask a few questions. If we ourselves can engage in this process, we can ask a few questions, we'll be able to be zeicha to greater understandings of emunah ourselves, not only our children, but ourselves as well. And the Divrei Shmuel is the Slonimer. So you notice, of course, the letters of Matzah and Chametz are the same too. Mem and Tzadi, but of course there's one difference. The Chametz is a Ches, Matzah is a Hey. What's the difference between the Ches and the Hey? The Ches, the left bar, is whole. The Hey, it's open. He says, if you open a little bit in your heart, you're willing to ask questions, you're willing to break your complacency and our spirit a little bit to let room for the Ribbono Shel Olam in, so then a person could be zeichet to tremendous things through the matzah. If we're going to be sealed, we're good, we're fine, we understand everything, so then the seder will accomplish nothing. You could go through the motions and you'll excite your children maybe, but you won't be able to engage in the process, and you certainly won't come out with a greater appreciation of emunah. In order for a person to do that, we have to open up a little bit. We have to break our spirit a little bit, understand that there's more there, and then we could be zeichet to it. We start magid, kol dechvin yesevi yechol, kol dechvin yesevi yisach. Whoever is hungry should come and eat. Whoever needs should come and participate. And I believe that that's because if we come and it's not about us, I'm fine. My emunah is good. It's about you guys. You guys, ask your questions. I see you come with all your stacks of Torah. Ask your questions. Say your Torah and all this. I'll entertain everybody, but I'm running the show. If that's your attitude, you don't need anything yourself. You don't have any questions yourself, so then it's not going to go anywhere. You have to be kol dechvin. You have to be kol ditzrich. If you understand that you also have questions and you're honest with yourself, you have the courage to ask that, you're vulnerable enough to ask that, break your spirit a little bit. So then, Amir Tashem, a person can scratch beneath the surface. We can all emerge with a reinforced, a new appreciation of our emunah. Okay. So.